You are listening to Eastside Radio Podcast.
89.7 FM, Eastside Radio.
Played the song you're listening to, Caught in the Crowd, by Kate Miller-Heidke last week here on Monday Drive, and I'm playing it again today because I thought the theme behind it was appropriate to my first guest today. The song narrates a true-to-life moment where Kate Miller-Heidke herself recalls not standing up for a classmate who was being victimised in a schoolyard bullying context. Her stance against bullying and standing up for what is morally right are underlying platforms for the policies of Allegra Spender, our federal independent member for Wentworth, whom we welcomed here on Monday Drive each month. And I'm delighted to say we do so again today. Allegra Spender, welcome to Monday Drive.
Thanks so much for having me, Alan.
It's always a pleasure, as you know. You've been pretty busy speaking out on nearly everything from freedom of information to housing to streaming and everything else in between since we spoke to you last. So we're very grateful for the time you've taken to chat with us today. How was Canberra since we saw you last?
Look, I think coming back to the community is always grounding, is what I would say about Canberra. It's always be better. I'm actually standing on a street in Bondi Junction, so Queen's Park at the moment, and it is nice to be home.
Nice to be home. Okay, well, speaking to you, last time you were on your way to the pub to chat with your constituents. Today you're in Bondi Junction. That's great. Allegra, the big news as recently, I believe, as Thursday of last week is the freedom of information issue. Freedom of information, of course, is an important part of keeping government honest because it gives the public a right to access government documents and so on. The government has proposed some amendments to the existing arrangements, which it is feared might contribute to things like increasing backlogs and restricting resourcing and increasing fees and so on and so forth. One of your election platforms has been to press for accountability and transparency in government processes, and your voice is amongst the loudest in opposing the new move, much to the chagrin of the Attorney General, Michelle Rowland. So tell us how you're positioned in terms of the new amendments proposed.
Look, I think it's worth acknowledging that there are challenges with freedom of information at the moment. And to be honest, this this of legislation that underpins freedom of information is decades old. It was, you know, some of it is pre-internet and certainly pre-AI and pre-current times. So I recognise there are some challenges, and I think the various reviews that have looked at freedom of information have said we do need to update this legislation. We do need change. But I think really the problem with where I think the government is both from a content and also a process point of view. From a process point of view, they just dropped this legislation, and the only people they admittedly consulted were government. So they talked to the agencies, they talked to the departments, which is great, but they forgot to talk to the other side of the equation, which are the people and, you know, journalists and others who access, you know, who are putting forward these freedom of information requests. And the second big problem is actually the content, because there are, I think, you know, some positive things in the legislation, but overall the legislation seeks to make it harder for people to access information. It increases the number of reasons why government can't, won't release information, including broadening cabinet secrecy rules. And, you know, when I speak to the transparency experts, people like the Centre for Public Integrity, they have real concerns with this in terms of how it really prevents accountability and transparency in government, which is what we should be expecting.
But one of those impediments has surely got to be to increasing the number of exemptions that it's trying to promote.
I think that's it. And I think, you know, there are now sort of caveats the government is suggesting putting in there, which is to say, look, you know, the government will provide information, you know, with sort of more saying, you know, to the best of ability, sort of making sure that it doesn't interfere with government business and things like that. And the truth of it, you know, what I believe we should be doing is to saying instead, you know, we've had massive technology advances. How can technology advances really increase our ability to provide information and freedom of information quickly, so to manage workload? And also, you know, should we be looking for more transparency of government, more, you know, of the information and things that the departments do to be released, so that we actually have more information out there in the public domain, so that we can have better debates about policy within the public domain as well as just behind closed doors.
Right, right. But a lot of people who want to exercise these freedom of information requests, not necessarily huge corporates and so on, if the fees are increased, how does that affect then small players seeking to access the process and the documents which are so important in this FOI process?
I think that is really important. I think particularly in relation to the media and other people, as you say, not just big ticket people, the government has said that individuals requesting information for themselves wouldn't be charged a fee, but others would be, and you know, including the media, who are really concerned about this. I think another piece that is of concerning is the government saying there should be no more anonymous freedom of information requests. And I think the real challenge for that is particularly for whistleblowers, for people acting for other people, where there is a reason why you would have anonymity, why that is important. And you remove that, you remove some of the transparency and accountability of government.
So it's really worth standing up and screaming about, because that that whistleblower thing is a pretty important fundamental you would wish to be protecting, I suspect.
I think absolutely. And what we've seen, unfortunately, from the government is that, they've talked a lot about, you know, good government and transparency, but they have a long way to go to make sure that their actions meet their words. And what you've actually seen is, you know, freedom of information requests granted in full has actually dropped from 40% to 21% since the government came into being, since the Albanese government came in 2022. And so I find that concerning, because I think I think if you have greater transparency of government, you increase trust in government. I worry in a time where there is decreasing trust in government around the world, to be going backwards. And certainly jurisdictions like Tasmania and Queensland, other jurisdictions who've looked recently at freedom of information, are going the other way. Mm. They're going into actually increase government transparency rather than reduced.
Yeah, I'm the golden question on all of this question, on all of this matter, of course, is will the Libs side with you to defeat it?
Well, we will see. And I think this is an interesting question, because the Libs are, you know, I think by almost all measures, probably out of government for some periods of time. But when they're in government, sure, they'd like this. And I think this is the point of, you know, when you're, you know, with those major parties, you know, they do often resist transparency, and they normally have to be brought kicking and screaming to increases of transparency. But I think the point, that a number of us have made, you know, particularly when you look at some of the great government failures that have happened, including things like robo-debt, it is a lack of accountability and transparency that is of detriment to the public. And ultimately, you know, the public servants and, you know, the public service is there to serve the people of Australia. And I think that is what we, you know, really fundamentally freedom of information goes to, is to making sure that, you know, with great constraints around, you know, discussions in cabinet and national security, but that there is accessibility of information for people. And I think that's important.
Yeah, I am noticing, however, that the Libs are a little bit quieter on this than people like Dr. Monique Ryan and Senator Pocock, who are whose voices are as loud as yours, and all strength to you. That's great stuff. Let's move along. In 2023, the government said it would introduce local content requirements for streaming platforms and, you know, people like Netflix and Amazon and Disney and so on, to protect local production industries. I'm reading that local producers are lamenting that very little has been delivered by the government in this regard since 2023. Do you have any views on the protection of our local industries in face of the might of those big streaming services?
Look, I think this is actually a really important issue, and a particularly important issue for the eastern suburbs. I think we are one of the heartlands for the screen production. We have things like, the studios down in the entertainment quarter. We have the Australian Film and Television School also within actually the sort of eastern suburbs, and we have a lot of very talented people across the arts, and many of them in the screen sector in Wentworth. Yeah. And what's happened is, we all know what we're doing. We don't, I don't think my kids barely know what commercial television is anymore. you watch things, people watch things online. We watch streaming services. We watch, we've changed the way that we engage with content.
Yeah.
But the problem is we haven't kept up in terms of how we manage Australian stories. And we've always had, or for a long time, we've had content quotas on commercial television to make sure that we are telling Australian stories, as well as importing the best from overseas. But we don't have those for the big streamers. Mm. So Netflix, Paramount, Disney, Amazon, whatever, Apple, whichever mode you look at your streaming services, they are not obliged to have Australian content.
Right.
And so what you're seeing is they're not investing in Australian stories. And that investment and the lack of investment is actually driving some of our local production out of business. And I think, for me, at the deepest level, is that Australia is different to other countries, and we should be telling Australian stories. I want my kids to be watching stories of Australia as well as watching stories of around the world, and I think that is part of our cultural identity.
Yeah.
But we need to make sure that the legislation keeps up with changing technology.
Well, it's interesting you should say it keeps up with, because this is one of those issues, I imagine, where once the horse is bolted, it's hard to drag it back in and corral it. So in terms of looking forward, it would be really fun to get the cart following the horse rather than getting in front of it.
I think that's right. But I think, we are actually at a really important time, because particularly the government's inaction, they've made a commitment, but then they haven't followed through the whole of last term. And so what I'm hearing, just sitting down with some local screen producers just last week or the week before, is that sort of Netflix and others, they've put a real brake on any of their local work because, they're waiting to see if the government's going to do anything.
Right.
And the problem is, if you put a brake on commission for long enough, the businesses just go under. And that is what a number of them are really looking at right now. So it's pretty important. And I think this is time, really time for the government to step up. I think this is coming down to, negotiations with Trump and concern about that. Mm. I understand those concerns, but the Australian screen industry needs the government to step up one way or another to make sure that it just doesn't go under while we're waiting to make sure that, we don't offend Trump. Mm. I think that is really important.
Yeah, there are a lot of people involved in that industry, and I think they'd be all very disappointed, let alone those trying to get in who can't find opportunities. That's not going to get any easier unless...
It isn't. And it's interesting. It's, has so many effects throughout the economy. It is writers, it is actors, it is, sets, all sorts of different people and skills that we are building. And Australia's really good at. We've got great Australian stories. We have great Australian humour. You have Bluey, things. We have exports that show that the way we tell our stories can actually be incredibly successful around the world. But we do need to back that. And at the moment, it's just not happening. So if people care about it, there's actually a petition going on at the moment under saveaustralianstories.com.au, or you can look at my Instagram. You can link to the petition there, because we've got like 9,000 signatures, I think, already. We're really trying to build this and build really the public awareness of this, because it's an important issue.
A very worthy campaign. I'm speaking with Allegra Spender, who is the Federal Independent Member for Wentworth. Allegra, the debate around Australia's migration levels and the impact that that's having on things like housing crisis was stirred last week by some remarks by Andrew Hastie. Do you believe his remarks and the consequent racism discussion should be taken seriously, or do they trigger memories of things like the British Conservative politician Enoch Powell's famous, or I should say infamous, Rivers of Blood speech going back to, I think it was about 1968-ish?
Yeah, I think... migration is a really important public policy area. I think it's one that we should be able to have discussions about, and I think very fact-based discussions about that. But I think where it really worries me is where we sort of move beyond facts. We move into insinuation, you know, we move into falsehoods, like, for instance, that Jacinta Namajira Price suggested, where she suggested, people from India were being fast-tracked for the government or, you know, getting preferential treatment. So I think this is where we have to be very careful. I remember actually talking to one of the vice-chancellors of universities and saying, you know, he had had some of his international students reporting that people were saying, you're the reason why I can't buy a home, and very aggressively. Yeah. And actually just in Parliament the other week, a woman, an Australian of, you know, Indian descent who's been in the country for 20 years, said for the first time in about the last month, in the last 4 weeks, she's had sort of explicit racism against her. And so that's why I think migration, we have to be very careful about, because people are worried about housing, you know, they are worried about government services, they are worried about these things. But to flirt with race, you know, and I think sort of catastrophizing over some of this is dangerous.
Yeah, because I'm wondering whether Andrew Hastie himself isn't actually confusing the issue here. Is the issue here migration per se, or is it insufficient housing and associated slow planning processes? Because they are different issues.
They are different issues, and certainly your migration, of course, has an impact on housing, but it's not as simple as people think. I mean, I think, you know, I had a real concern with some of Andrew Hastie's posts, and one of them, his post was, oh, the reason you can't afford a home is because of all these migrants in the last 2 years, when actually during COVID times, where basically our borders were closed, so, you know, we had the lowest migration we have ever had, house prices rose by 25% in some parts. So I think the sort of these links are much less clear. There's much more going on there than simple migration, and there's a real danger of you know, trying to make out the boogeyman over here is the one that you can blame. Yeah. And so let's have a fact-based conversation about this. You know, we know that migration can impact rents and has. We know that there was a big sort of a halt in migration during COVID, and there's been a big growth in the last couple of years. That's starting to come down, and to be truth, I think, you know, we should be trying to bring that down. It's, you know, those levels are not sustainable over the long term certainly to keep up with housing, but at the same time, let's do this in a thoughtful way and not run after misinformation, because really work again on, like, how do we make sure that this community, everybody feels welcome? Some of the rhetoric really goes against that.
Yeah, I think the other interesting intertwining theme on this one is the pathways towards skilled trades in Australia.
Absolutely. We're just not bringing in the construction workers. And this is where I do have a big beef with the government. They haven't done everything they can to bring in construction workers, nor have they done it enough to make sure when they're here, these construction workers are able to, you know, use their skills as best as they possibly can. And so that is, I think, these are really important public policy and debates to have. Mm-hmm. But let's get the fact base right.
Yeah. Allegra, last week I asked my listeners for key issues they'd like me to raise with you, flagging that we would be having this conversation today. The feedback, most of the feedback centred on the men's shed, about which we spoke last time. And now I've got an update for you, and that is the men's shed is changing their name to The Shed. And the reason reason they're doing that is to recognise their decision to welcome women into the context. But that's all slightly irrelevant if they've got nowhere from which to operate. Sure. So have you got an update since last time we spoke?
So we keep on pushing on this. So we've actually written to Defence, who are one of the landowners in the area, to keep on to see if they've got any land. We haven't heard anything back yet, but we, you know, either for a temporary or permanent home, and, you know, quite possibly temporary, they are one of the people that might have some space. So that's the one we're trying to pursue, as well as working at the sort of with our state and local government counterparts, staying in touch with them, because I think everyone's trying their angles.
Yes.
So everyone's got, you know, what are the bits of land and who owns them and how can we get access to them or encourage access to them? So that's where I'm at the moment. I keep on pursuing, you know, the avenues that are open to me, and the next one I'm sort of after at the moment is defence.
That's great. Allegra, we didn't get time to talk about your climate agenda today, but in a nod to it, what I'm going to do is to play some of Beethoven's Pastoral Symphony instead, because it does convey the harmony with nature and it aligns greatly with your climate platform. So thank you for joining us again today here on Monday Drive, and we look forward to speaking with you again in the future.
Thanks so much, Alan. Really appreciate it.
You have been listening to Eastside Radio Podcast. For selections of more enjoyable content like this, visit our website, eastsidefm.org, and click on Podcast.